This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, and I am very much a parent, you have your fair share of big talks with your kids, especially if your kids happen to read your very adult novels because they're an advanced reader and you just can't rip it out of their grubby hands. But that is another story altogether. One of those big talks that you should be having is about money. I talk to my kids about money all the time because it is something that my parents didn't talk about with me. Greenlight can definitely help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I have recently started doing an allowance for my six-year-old, and he loves it. He also loves doing chores for money. Like, I do not think that we can start them too early these days. And Greenlight makes it very easy for him to see exactly how much money he is making for which chores. It also helps my kids, even the four-year-old here, build financial literacy and independence by learning how to earn, save, and spend wisely. The Greenlight app also comes with an in-app financial literacy game called Level Up that helps kids build money confidence through videos, bite-sized challenges, mini games, and more. More than 6 million parents and kids use Greenlight to learn how to make responsible financial choices, and I am all in. I'm having a good time with it. I tried a lot of allowance apps, and many of them were very, very bad. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/influence. That's greenlight.com/influence to try Greenlight for free. greenlight.com/influence. Under the Influence is brought to you by Quince. So I just got back from book tour last week, and right before I left, I got one of the Quince Mongolian cashmere sweaters in the mail. I got it in this really, really sexy green color. And I had all of these dresses planned for the Sicilian Inheritance book tour event. And then I ended up wearing this green cashmere sweater from Quince, like at least half of the time that I was doing book events and podcast interviews, because it looked so good. And I kept getting all of these compliments on it. And you know that I love compliments. So I was just very excited to add this into my book tour wardrobe. The best part about this sweater, about this 100% Mongolian cashmere sweater from Quince, is that it is $50. It's $50. Quince is luxury at an affordable price point, and I love that about them. All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. You deserve nice things, I tell you that every day. And you deserve to be able to indulge in affordable luxury. So just go to quince.com/influence for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's a really long time to return something. I mean, like, really long. A lot of places won't let me even return something I bought yesterday. That is Quince, quince.com/influence to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/influence. Hello, hello, hello. Coming at you on the tail end of the Sicilian Inheritance book tour. I have been on the road for a week. I am so excited and exhilarated and also exhausted and drained and kind of beaten to shit. And you know what? All the things can be true at once. They can. But if I've learned anything with this book launch, it is that bookstagrammers and book influencers are more important than ever to the ecosystem of books. Look, 10 years ago, I was able to get a feature in People magazine and sell a ton of books. But now, that kind of press really doesn't do much. In fact, 90% of the readers I've talked to said that they found my book through social media. That's a lot of power. A lot of power. I'm just going to say it. I fucking love bookstagrammers. They're my biggest hype people. And my guest this week is Jordan Mablo. But you might know him better as Jordy's Book Club on Instagram. Jordy's book club has more than 140,000 followers. That is a lot of influence and clout, my friend. And I don't think it's giving him too much credit to say that Jordy's recommendations really can help an author find new readers. They can. They absolutely can. Jordy never expected to be a book influencer. He didn't. It all came as sort of a happy surprise. But here he is, and he is wildly, wildly popular. I love our conversation today because we're really going to dig into how we can create more respect in the book influencing ecosystem. How can we all meet one another's needs? And how can we value the people who are selling books for publishers and authors? And also, what can we all learn from Bookstagrammers about growing our own personal brands online and how to share our passions with the world? Hi, I want to talk to you about the big, wide, crazy world of book influencing. How did you get here?
That's a good question. Let's see, I started 6 years ago in 2018. And at the time, I had a lot of free time in my job and I was looking to kind of fill it with some new hobbies. And I was always a big reader growing up and I kind of started getting back into it. And I was looking for this place to kind of track all the books I was reading. I didn't really know about Goodreads. I didn't know that there were, you know, Storygraph hadn't been invented yet. And so for me, I went on Instagram and just kind of started looking around at book reviews, didn't realize it was this thing and kind of fell into this rabbit hole that was book Instagram at the time. And it was so calming to kind of see all these beautiful pictures of books and find a community of people like me who were talking about books, maybe having polarizing opinion about things, felt like the place where I could nerd out, where it generally it was like I was talking to my husband and he was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I just kind of fell into that way. And I decided to make an account one day, put it on private. I didn't even tell my husband I was doing it. Wasn't looking to build a following. It was basically just a place for me to post the books I was reading. And then I kind of started getting into it. I kind of found this creative satisfaction in the photography and the aesthetic and the layouts. And it just kind of became this outlet for me where not only I could talk about books, but I got this really great creative satisfaction out of it. And it just kind of took off from there.
I love that. I love it. You know, the most successful influencers that I know are the ones who started it just because it brought them joy.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good reminder. I was just talking to Lynn Slater, who wrote How to Be Old. She's the accidental icon. And she's like, if you want to be successful at anything, like just follow your passion and you will. Like, don't do it because you think that you're going to have a certain outcome because the universe laughs at you.
Exactly. And for me, it was, I think that I've seen, doing this 6 years now, I've seen a lot of people create accounts, I've built relationships with them, and then they've kind of burned out. And I've seen so many people kind of burn out and leave the platform and fall off from posting. And I think because they come into it maybe with the expectation of, I want to build a following and I want to become like Insta-famous, I want to be an influencer. And for me, that's exciting and that's fun to have a following. But first and foremost, it's how do I keep the creative passion and excitement alive for me and how do I not burn out? And over the years, that's been pivoting from things, whether it's doing flat lays or whether it's pivoting to posts with arrows and captions or whether it's now doing reels. I've continuously had to reinvent myself and challenge myself. And I think as a result, it's led to more creative inspiration and continued to be an outlet for me that I really love. I don't remember ever being nervous. I just remember being like kind of embarrassed a little bit. Now I'm so proud of it and it's such a part of my DNA. But at the time it felt like such a weird thing to do, especially I think at Instagram at the time, it was kind of like showing your aesthetic and your lifestyle. And this was like, my face wasn't in it at all. It was just books, which seems so.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it was different back then. And 6 years ago, I would call you an OG book influencer. It feels like a lifetime ago.
I remember when I started, I went to a couple of conferences and it was like, I think like book two was still like the very big thing. Like there were some people, but book YouTube was really big and book Twitter was really big. But there was definitely an OG group of book Instagrammers before me. But it did feel like there was a core group of us at a time. It almost feels like when you go into high school, you have kind of like your class that you start out with. And I've seen now like newer generations coming on, which is really fun to see. But I still have some of my OG class that I kind of came up the ranks with that I still hang out with and talk to.
The original class. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I am, you know, elder enough to remember Book Tumblr, which was a big thing before Tumblr was bought by Yahoo and destroyed.
The good old days.
I had a book. The good old days. The good old days. Exactly. Exactly. Well, how did you then grow this into something so big? I think some of it has to be organic because your book recommendations are actually genuinely good. It's not always the case. It's not. I like everything you recommend. I'm like, yeah, that's a me book. You're one of my people, which is the beauty of Bookstagram because, and so many people that enjoy different genres can find the books.
Yeah.
But then I think, like, you know, some growth is also, you know, playing the game with the algorithm. So yeah. how did you grow?
I think, and a lot of things have changed, obviously, in the last 6 years with how Instagram operates. And at the time, like, Reels wasn't a thing, right? And you look at Reels now, and it's such a big, powerful force when it comes to engagement and growing your account. But when I started, I wasn't even, like, focused on it. And I think it didn't start until I realized that if you get enough followers, the major publishers will start to send you early copies of books. And then that felt like the gamification of the account of, like, how do I get to X number of followers to start to get advanced copies of things? And so I think for me, it was like, I did research, which sounds very nerdy, but like, mm-hmm. I was like, how does one grow an Instagram account? And it was like, things like at the time it was giveaways, which I, you know, a lot of people refer to as like almost buying followers. But if you have a lot of books or you have extras, like it was an easy way back then to gain followers very quickly. It was one of those things where I engaged with a ton of people. I would follow a lot of people that I looked up to or whose accounts I liked. I would comment on their posts. I would build relationships with them. A lot of it was kind of quid pro quo. Like, you would post stories in anticipation that they would repost you, and mm-hmm. that always kind of helped. So you would always hope, like, a big account, like back when I started, if you were reposted by Book of the Month or Reese's Book Club, you would get a ton of followers. And so we used to always buy the Reese Book Club books. We would buy the Book of the Month books, and we would do these really big posts featuring them in the hopes of getting reposted and getting followers as a result of that. And so it was things like that that I think really started to kind of help. But I also think at a certain point for me, being honest, like, I was, you know, a white, cute guy, like, in a sea of women who were really, you know, holding the platform together and doing the job here. And I kind of was of the minority of people doing it in my kind of gender age group. And I think mm-hmm. because of that, I was a little different, and allowed me to kind of elevate myself a little bit as a result of that and kind of stick out. But I also think I was really authentic. I am authentic when I talk about books in real life. I am polarizing. I can be abrasive. I have a very strong opinion. And I think that comes through in my book reviews and what I like to read. And I tend to be drawn towards premium popcorn commercial fiction, which I think is, you know, you walk into a Barnes & Noble and that's a lot of times what you see on that front table. And so my reading taste probably also aligned with a wider audience than a lot of bookstagrammers who really focus on specific genres or niches.
Totally, totally. And I am a popcorn commercial fiction girl these days. And it's, and you know, I've gone through phases. I've gone through very literary phases. I've gone through my fantasy science fiction phase. And this is where I have landed, not just as a reader, but also as an author.
Yeah.
And I love it. Like, I just, this is where I want to be. It feels like my warm place, my happy place. And I think that's why I love your content so much. It was so funny coming up because I was like, oh, I need to write a literary masterpiece.
Yeah.
And then it's like, hey, Piazza, you don't even like reading those.
Why do I want to write?
Why the hell do you want to write one? Like, what is this ego thing that you've got going on here? This is crazy. It really is crazy. And so then, and then I found my sweet spot. And so, yeah, this, it feels really good. And your content is my sweet spot. But I do think it's worth noting that you are like a handsome white dude in a sea of women. Most bookstagrammers, so many influencers are women. I think it's like 80% of influencers, at least on Instagram. Like, we're not talking creators on TikTok and YouTube. It's primarily female. And do people react to you differently? I think one of the many reasons you stood out is because especially in the beginning, you were a handsome dude in a sea of women promoting books. And I think it's always nice on Instagram to see something other than what we're normally used to seeing. Like, how do you think this was either an advantage or a disadvantage for you?
I think when I started, it was neither of those things. I really wasn't I wasn't an account that put my face to it probably until 6 to 7 months in, just because I had my own personal account. This one felt very specifically driven towards books. And again, I wasn't really being public about the whole thing. So I think when I started, what probably drew people to me when I started was my photos and my photography, because I did take a lot of time to kind of curate and make this aesthetic. I had this really big gray dining table at the time that everyone knew my posts by. And I really spent a lot of time kind of learning photography. And that became something that was really creatively satisfying to me. And I think that coupled with my reviews and posts really kind of helped to start to build it. And then I can remember 6 months in actually doing like a introductory post and like a picture of me. And then I started kind of being the face of the account. And I think that did help in some degree. I think it was like, oh, you know, we are seeing a lot of the same recommendations. We're seeing a lot of very similar kind of reviews and posts. This guy's actually kind of something different, posting some of these things that are different, posting in a different way. And again, I was kind of like gamifying it. Like, how do I differentiate myself? How do I use hashtags? How do I do things that are going to elevate and separate me from maybe what's already being done? And kind of what are the blind spots in the marketplace in a way that would help with that? But I think a lot of it was also kind of like luck a little bit. Like, I don't know how that algorithm works. And I don't know, you know, what I did that was different or what I could recommend to people other than I was really my authentic self and I shared more about myself. And it's kind of a vulnerable position to be in, being so public, especially now with my account. I try not to think about how many followers I have or who follows me when I post about, you know, dumb things about me or my family or, you know, parenting or work. But I do think those kinds of things also elevate me, right? I'm a gay father of a daughter. I think that, you know, differentiates me. I think people like me now for the personal side of me as much as sometimes the book side of me. They just like to see the Sunday stories I do with snarky faces and reactions, or just getting to know me and my life and how I read and how I read so many books and how I've incorporated reading into my life. So I think the kind of lifestyle piece of it is now almost playing as big of an impact as the reading piece of it.
I agree. And I call it kind of the Martha Stewart effect that, you know, Martha began as, you know, kind of a domestic guru, but, you know, with instructional content. Yeah. So here's how to bake this, or here's how to decorate this. But she became Martha fucking Stewart when she like really brought this out as a lifestyle brand, when she showed all pieces of her and brought us into her home. And yeah, I mean, I do think I've been following you for a while now, and it does feel like your tipping point was really when you're like, Jordy's fucking book club, where, you know, we get a peek into your life, because I do. I love your book recommendations, but I also love, you know, your Sunday stories. And I love hearing about you with your daughter. I mean, we really connected when you started talking about potty training.
Yeah.
And I was like, let me tell you how I bribe my children to poop in the potty. Okay.
A lot of people who have sent me their tips on how to get my daughter to poop in the potty is Who knew the internet could be so helpful?
It's like the one moment. It's like book recommendations and also potty training. I'm like, oh God, thank God for you. Thank God. Did you get it done?
We're there. We're getting there.
You're getting there.
You know, it's a work in progress, but we're feeling comfortable and confident.
Yeah. We went through so many phases. We thought that one of ours was like an insane genius, because at like 18 months, suddenly they start walking to the potty and like doing it. And it's because they were watching a sibling doing it. And it was, we're like, oh my God, this is the easiest thing ever. And then like another 18 months, 2 years. And we're like, oh no, not there yet.
Mm-mm. It's just crazy. No. Like the things that are in your brain that you shove aside for things like, let's go pee pee on the potty. Like I just, man, never thought that that was going to be my mantra, but it is these days. Which,
but it is. And also how often I use the word potty in real life, like when I'm out with other adults, I'm like, I'm going to go to the potty now. God, I hate myself. Actually,
I bring the M&Ms to any bar I go to just in case someone needs a treat afterwards.
Just in case. Okay. I mean, you know what? But that's kind of nice, to be honest, because if you come out of the bathroom and someone's like, have an M&M, you're like, you know what? I like that level of praise and confirmation.
Bring that back more in regular life.
Thank you. I would like to bring that back more in regular life. Time for a quick break and a word from our sponsors. And during the break, if you want to order yourself one or seven copies of The Sicilian Inheritance, I'm not going to stop you. I'm not. I think publishers have really started to respect bookstagrammers in the past, like 3 and 4 years. And there's entire programs now dedicated to the bookstagrammer, as there should be. And I want to see even more recognition. Like, I do think that bookstagrammers should be paid for their content and things like that. What do you think about, you know, trying to find a way for bookstagrammers to make a living off of bookstagramming?
I think if you are signing up to be a bookstagrammer, it should not be to make a living. I do not think you can make a living doing this on Instagram. I'm impressed by anyone that does that, and hats off to you. I do not make a living off of my book Instagram account. I'm sure a lot of people would be very interested to know how much money I make off the actual account. Not that much. I do make some now off of some of my other ancillary projects, like my newsletter. And sometimes I do get a sponsored post, but those are few and far between. But I have a full-time job. I have, you know, a kid, I have dogs, I have a family. So like, I don't have the bandwidth to also monetize my account the way that I think maybe others do. But I do think that bookstagrammers deserve respect. And I do think that they should be valued for the work they're doing, especially when it's publishers reaching out. And I'm not sure that sending a free copy of the book is always that value that should be associated with us. I think there should be monetary value associated with us. But I also am not sure how much we're influencing the publishing community or the buying community at large versus a platform like BookTok, which we're you can see meaningful sales data associated with BookTok videos. You see someone post a video about A Little Life, and then you can actually see the associated sales bump that book got and how it got back into the bestseller list and exactly how that happened. And I don't know if I can ever point to a book that I have reviewed or given a platform that I'd seen an associated sales bump. And I may be wrong about that, but I think to that effect, we still are very influential in this space. And there are millions of people on Instagram, and I see them saving my reels and my posts and my stories and asking for highlights. So people are buying as a result of that. And I do think we should be paid for our work when it's, you know, when the content or when the account is doing the work that deserves to be shown that value. And I don't know the metrics for that. I don't know how the publishing marketing companies are working to determine that. I don't have access to all of that data, but I do think sometimes I get outreach from publishers where it kind of feels like they're doing me a favor by sending me the book rather than the other way around, which is like, we're very helpful with you guys. We drive people to buy the book. We drive people to the post. We are driving people to the publisher's website or their own Instagram page or the author's page. And I think just respect in general, I think, is the bare minimum that sometimes I'm not even seeing from publishers. So I think for me, that's the bar that I'm looking at even.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I completely agree with that, too. And I can say that from the author side that, you know, I say all the time, I'm like, you know, I don't just blanket the field with free books. You know, it's the same. I consider it the same level because I've dove into the history of mom blogging and back when companies thought they could pay these mothers in diapers and, you know, stick-free frying pans, and then they would just do their job for them. And the majority of bookstagrammers are doing this for the love of books, and it is an incredible service to readers to have other readers recommending in this way. But don't just blanket the field and also not know someone's content when you're sending them something. It's like a publicist sending me a blind pitch when I was a celebrity reporter and being like, do you want to cover this municipal bond conference?
Oh, yeah. Like we get, I get asked all the time for people who are like, you know, we love your account and we think that this health and wellness book is the perfect book for you to review. And I'm like, delete. Like, there's no way you actually looked at any of my content. You just saw my followers and decided.
You saw my numbers. You saw my numbers. Yeah.
And I think from a Bookstagram point of view, I think some Bookstagrammers need to realize that galleys are sometimes used as a marketing tool. And so the job of the galley is to get into the hands of people with big accounts with the goal of getting lots of eyes on them. So I think there's a push and a pull there, right? Where Bookstagrammers kind of have to realize the impact and what the value of galleys is and what the marketing or publicity teams are trying to achieve if there are print galleys. Just like I think sometimes Bookstagrammers get, you know, upset or readers don't love seeing things like book club stickers or the bursts on book covers, you know, saying coming soon to Netflix, things like that, that kind of cover up the cover art without realizing there's a whole marketing machine and authors behind the scene who are saying, yes, we want those things on our cover because ultimately they end up helping sell more books and getting more people to read those books and building value for the author themselves. So there are a lot of things that are actually going on behind the scenes that I think sometimes readers don't realize that authors and marketers are really doing to kind of help build value for the author themselves.
I would love a more seamless ecosystem where there's a lot more interaction between publishers and marketers and sellers and book influencers and content creators, just where everyone kind of like knows each other better. And, you know, you figure out how everyone can meet each other's needs, because I love the world of Bookstagram so much. And I want to see it flourish and succeed. And I want people to be happy and to feel good making their content.
Yeah, I think as we discussed earlier, I just think it starts with respect both ways, right? Like where the book community kind of understands a little bit of the job of the marketers and the publicity teams and what they're trying to get out of, you know, helping the authors and the books at the end of the day, but also the marketers and publicists kind of understanding the book community and the work that goes into Bookstagram. And it's not just, you know, throwing a picture up there. A lot of us are really taking time. Sometimes it takes me 2 to 3 hours to make some of my posts. And I love doing it, but it's also nice to feel valued for the work we're putting in, because at the end of the day, these are, you know, posts and reviews that help with marketing for the most part. I don't generally post a lot of negative reviews on my page. So most of the stuff you see is me being kind of a hype man and buzz and hype for books and authors. So I've been lucky enough to really make some great connections with publicists and marketing executives in the years that I've been doing this. So it is a lot easier for me at this point, having now done it for 6 years. But for people starting off, it's still tough. And I can remember when I started, it was signing up for NetGalley. It was signing up for Edelweiss. I think we've talked about it for Joe. One of your Charlotte Walsh was one of the first books I was actually approved to read at NetGalley. So I still remember being so excited getting my first few approvals, but there is a learning curve once you sign up for Book Instagram as to how you start to kind of build a reputation and a relationship with some of these, at least some of these bigger publishers. Though I will say, I think with the rise of independent publishing and the success of a lot of independent authors on Book TikTok, it does feel like there's maybe some more roads to, you know, getting access to books and authors and information in that way.
Yeah, no, there definitely is. There definitely is. And, you know, one of the cool things about making this podcast is that we've gotten to show the labor of creators, the work that goes into posts, because I do think that just the lay person who isn't as involved is like, you just post a pretty picture. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like as an author who now creates content, and like these things take me 2 hours sometimes to make them halfway decent. And it takes content creators even longer than that. It is a job. And even if you're doing it as a passion project, it is still work and it is still labor. And it should be both respected and I think compensated in some situations.
I think that a lot of times, you know, we, at least when I started, it felt like I was getting this great perk out of it, right? Where, my God, thank you so much for even reaching out to me, let alone sending me a copy of the book. And now it feels a little bit like sometimes I get in this place of, I get nervous even to ask the publicist or marketing executives if there's a marketing spend for things they reach out to me about. And I think we should normalize being able to email back and say, hey, I love this book, would be happy to feature a post about it, but would also be curious if you have a marketing spend here. Do you have money to pay influencers or content creators to do this? Because I've had situations in the past, I haven't seen it recently, but there have been situations where I've been a huge hype person for a book, not gotten paid for it, only to see some influencer in a totally different space that has nothing to do with books getting paid a sponsored post for the same book. And it feels like it doesn't feel great to see that kind of thing. And it makes me want to do less of that kind of work. But I will say in the last year, probably at least for me, it does feel like for the most part, I'm getting a really good quid pro quo with the relationships and the people I work with. And maybe that's in part because I have kind of worked closer with people that are giving me the respect I feel I deserve and value me for my time, and probably worked less with those publishers that are not as appreciative, I think, of the content we're working on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting to be working on the other side of the pond at the same time because, you know, so much is the same in terms of publishing in the UK, but they definitely seem further ahead in terms of paying creators out of the marketing budget for books. And it's the first question that my UK agent asked my publisher on our meeting. They're like, what's your marketing spend on creators? And like, which creators are you targeting and what is the reach? And that is a conversation we've actually never had at any of my publishers in the US.
Well, that's exciting to hear. And it feels good to know that people are taking that consideration. And I think there's a lot of people that are doing book influencing and content creators who are spending a majority of their time really trying to change the way the industry works with content creators in the book space. And I think that's how I just want to say I'm grateful and appreciative of those people who are spending a lot of time doing it. I unfortunately don't always have that time, but I do think, you know, in doing a podcast like this and saying, I think it is normal and okay to reach out and say, hey, like, is there money to be spent on these kinds of posts? Or, you know, what can we do that makes it feel like you are valuing the time and energy I'm putting into something?
Exactly. And, you know, I've worked in media for so long and no one would have said, hey, can we just have a banner ad for free if we send you some cupcakes? That wouldn't have worked like that. I will say though, when I was
once in a while, I'm not going to lie, Joe.
when I was a gossip columnist, I may or may not have mentioned a celebrity plastic surgeon when he gave me some Botox.
You got to do what works for you, right? At the end of the day,
but I mean, I needed a smooth forehead, Jordy.
Priorities.
And I mean, Those needle guys in Beverly Hills, they would give you all of the gossip if you're in their chair. Like the second they've got a captive audience, they're like, let me tell you who got a butt implant.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
In there. I know. I mean, that's what I had to do for the job. I get it. I loved our talk. I want to end with some books that you're loving right now.
Yeah. Let me think. If you're looking for a thriller, I really enjoyed Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie, about a woman who has to return to her southern town to kind of clear her name of the murder of her best friend, which she's accused of in this podcast that becomes a national sensation. It's really fun. I love the voice. I think Amy is really funny and dark and twisty. And it was just one of those books that kind of pulled me out of a reading slump, which I always think is a good one.
I'm dying to start that one. I'm going to try to start it this week. I mean, obviously because of the podcast connection.
Yeah.
I can't decide if I want to do the audiobook or the print book because I heard the audiobook really does the podcast well.
I have heard the audio is good and there are some good interstitials. So I would be curious as to what that's like. But the book is really fun and it's hard to put down. It's very fast paced.
All right. Maybe I'll do both. Maybe I'll do a melange.
Yeah.
Melange of the two.
That was really good. I think if you're looking for like laughs and fun, I think Sylvia's Second Act by Hilary Yablon is really good. That's basically kind of like Sex and the City meets Thelma and Louise with this 63-year-old woman who walks in on her husband cheating on her and decides to uproot her life, move to New York City and start over again at the age of 63 and kind of reboot what she's doing. It's it's just really voicey again. I thought it was like laugh out loud funny. I thought there were some solid twists actually in it. And I just really enjoyed it. It's just a really nice, easy breezy escapist read.
Oh, God, you're so good at recommending books. There's a reason that people like your page.
Thank you. I think at the end of the day, it's like I am just drawn to fun popcorn commercial fiction.
Yes.
Things that are entertaining. And I had someone the other day who was like, this wasn't a 5-star read for me. It was just fine. And I was like, what's wrong with just fine once in a while? Like, books can just be entertaining. Like, not every book has to change your life as much as great as that is. I think the reading experience in of itself, like, I love watching The Real Housewives on TV. It's not changing the world. It's not changing my life, but it's really entertaining and fun. And it allows me to escape for a couple hours. And if a book can do the same thing, I don't think it has to be, you know, Schindler's List to be able to.
No, it sure doesn't. It sure doesn't. I used to mock my job doing celebrity magazines to my gynecologist of all people. And she was like, you know what? She's like, after a day doing what I do, all I want to do is get into a warm bath and read my Us Weekly. And I'm like, you're bringing life into the world, my friend.
Yeah.
And I'm helping you do that.
Oh, 100%. And like, for me, like, I feel like People Magazine is also my, like, that's my thing, right? Like, I love a
People Magazine.
I like a good People Magazine on a Sunday sometimes. Like, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Nope. Mm-mm. Oh, both those wrecks are so good.
And I think I could one more.
Throw one more. Yeah.
I really liked Kylie Reid's new book. She wrote Come and Get It a couple years ago, which was like a great book also. And sorry, Come and Get It is the new one.
The new one. Yeah. She wrote Such a Fun Age.
So her new one is Come and Get It, about a group of college students and the resident advisor and this woman who comes in and kind of throws everything into turmoil when she starts to do a research project. And it's super character driven and kind of like that those books that kind of explore character dynamics in kind of an awkward and cringeworthy way that you kind of can't turn away. But she does it in she takes something that is like a little and turns it into so much in such a easy breezy way. And I think she explores some thought provoking topics and asks complicated questions in a way that's really entertaining and complex and nuanced. And I just really love it. And I've just enjoyed recommending it to people so much.
Oh, great. I have Come and Get It. I have all of these on my nightstand, actually. Another perk of being an author, I do get sent galleys and free books.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Botox and books.
This is not working out for you online. All you have to do is write a successful book and they will start sending the book that way also.
Truth.
That's the hack for everyone.
That's the hack. Yeah. I mean, it's the only reason I do this. It's true. Will you tell everyone where they can find you?
Yeah. So I am on Instagram at jordys.book.club. And they can also find me. My Substack is, you can find that on my website. It is just jordysbookclub.com.
Okay. That is all we have for today. I love Jordy so much. I love his book recs. If, like me, you just want delicious commercial fiction that you will devour, that will get you out of a reading slump, follow Jordy. That's his jam. And you know what? I love Jordy so much that I don't even mind that he hated all of the male characters in Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win. Because you know what? So did I. The women in that book, they were wonderful. The men? Meh. 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 All right, I am going to go jump into an icy cold plunge right now because my anxiety is at a fever pitch over this book launch. It has been a roller coaster. Like I said, I'm exhausted and exhilarated, and I just kind of need a breather. And I want to be honest about that because I think a lot of times on social media, you see a lot of the highs, and maybe I don't share enough of the lows. And I want to share my entire reality with all of you because I think that's important. I do. Keep ordering The Sicilian Inheritance. Choose us for your book clubs. I will zoom in. I will make cannoli. And there are now 3 episodes available of The Sicilian Inheritance podcast on Apple Podcasts. And I mean, if you want to take a trip to Sicily and solve a 100-year-old murder, we gotcha. We do. Now go do something nice for yourself. You deserve it.